In our last episode of Notes on the Revolution, we saw that Donald Trump invokes an ideological picture of socialism constructed in the early years of the Cold War, an image that has little to do with the actual characteristics of the evolving socialist political economic systems of those nations that are constructing socialism. In his State of the Union address, Trump attacks in particular Venezuela for its socialism. He declared, "We stand with the Venezuelan people in their noble quest for freedom, and we condemn the brutality of the Maduro regime, whose socialist policies have turned that nation from being the wealthiest in South America into a state of abject poverty and despair." Trump's hostility toward the government of Nicolas Maduro, however, has little to do with Venezuela's declared socialist project and its presumed destruction of its economy. The conflict between the United States and Venezuela is rooted in the Venezuelan desire to control its petroleum, and it is a conflict that has unfolded for decades. Petroleum emerged as the principal raw materials export from Venezuela during the period 1917 to 1960. Because of U.S. imperialist penetration of the political process during that era, the Venezuelan state permitted foreign companies to exploit the oil with little income to the state. After 1960, a popular movement emerged, and its principal demand was greater control over the petroleum industry. The period of the 1960s and 1970s became known as the era of petroleum nationalism, demanding that the state maximize its petroleum income. As concession to the movement, Venezuelans were increasingly appointed to positions of management in the petroleum companies. Petroleum nationalism culminated in the nationalization of the petroleum industry and the foundation of a state-owned petroleum company, PDVSA, in 1976. This change in proprietorship did not result in a change in management, inasmuch as the companies by that date had already developed with Venezuelan managers. However, the Venezuelan managers during their careers had been socialized into the norms and values of the international petroleum companies and had internalized the perspective of international capital. As a result, the state-owned PDVSA adapted to the neocolonial world system, exploiting petroleum in accordance with the norms and interests of the international petroleum industry, rather than utilizing the petroleum industry as an integral part of a development plan for the nation. PDVSA adopted a strategy of channeling surpluses to investments in production and sales, thus minimizing profits and corresponding payments to the state. These dynamics meant that nationalization did not place the petroleum industry under effective national control. Indeed, the petroleum industry operated with even more autonomy as a result of the fact that the state relaxed its oversight, falsely believing that the industry was under national control. In the 1990s, there emerged in Latin America popular movements in opposition to neoliberal economic policies. In the case of Venezuela, this dynamic included a popular disgust with the failure of the nationalization of the petroleum industry to promote national economic development. In this context, Hugo Chavez emerged with a discourse that castigated the Venezuelan elite for its subservience to imperialist interest and that proposed a project of autonomous economic development. Chavez, a military officer who became nationally known as a result of a failed coup d'etat in 1992, won the Venezuelan presidential elections of 1998, assuming office on February 2, 1999. the Chavez government sought to reduce the autonomy of PDVSA and to incorporate its resources into a project of national development. The Chavez government appointed new directors of PDVSA, replacing the directors appointed by previous governments. With the new leadership of PDVSA, the state income from petroleum increased significantly, and the new funds were directed toward various social projects in education, health, and housing, as well as to wage increases, financial assistance to those in need, and the elimination of foreign debt. From the beginning, the U.S. government sought to undermine the government of Chavez through the support of those sectors in Venezuela that have interest in opposition to the Chavez project. These sectors included the technocratic elite that managed the petroleum industry prior to 1998, and the business elite, principally owners of import-export companies. These opposition sectors control the private media of communication, and they can count on international financial support and the active engagement of the U.S. Embassy. These conflictive dynamics unfolded during the Chavez administrations of 1999 to 2013 and the administrations of Chavez's personally designated successor, Nicolas Maduro, from 2013 to the present. The declaration of the socialist character of the Popular Revolution by Hugo Chavez does not, in and of itself, challenge the economic interests of the United States. The problem is that the Chavez definition of socialism includes the right of nations to have control over their natural resources. In his State of the Union address, Trump also attacked Iran, not for being socialist, but for being terrorist, for being anti-Semitic, and for developing nuclear energy, which gives it the technical capacity to develop nuclear weapons if it were to be inclined to do so. These declarations are pretext. Iran is a threat to the United States because, like Venezuela, it desires to control its petroleum. And from the moment that this desire attained political expression, the Persian nation provoked the opposition and hostility of the United States. The conflict began 67 years ago. During World War II, a despotic dynasty in Iran had been removed from power by the Allied armies as a consequence of its relations with Nazi Germany. Following the war, the secular modernist constitution of 1906 and the parliament were restored, and elections were held. In 1953, Mohammad Mossadegh rose to power on the basis of a promise to recover control of the country's oil. Upon taking office as prime minister, Mossadegh canceled the lease with British Petroleum and announced nationalization of the oil industry. In response to this Middle Eastern version of petroleum nationalism, the United States funded a coup d'etat that placed in power Reza Shah Pahlavi, the son of the previous king. The young Shah signed a treaty with the United States that turned management of the nation's oil over to an international consortium of oil corporations. Tamim Ansari, a scholar of the Islamic world, maintains that these events in Iran transform the international image of the United States from a defender of democracy in the world to a new imperialist power, displacing Great Britain. The Shah of Iran ruled in a totalitarian manner for 25 years, an important ally of the United States in the region. The installation of the Shah gave rise to a resistance movement in which the leading figure was Dr. Ali Shariati, a French-educated socialist intellectual who envisioned a progressive socialism in the Islamic tradition. A secondary tendency in the resistance movement was led by Ayatollah Khomeini, who promoted a more literal reading of the Quran. In 1978, a coalition of secular leftist, Islamic socialist, and pro-Khomeini Shiite revolutionaries drove the Shah of Iran out of the country through a nonviolent revolution. By 1979, the Khomeini faction, more in tune with the deepest impulses of the Iranian masses at that moment, had taken the leadership in the movement and established the Islamic Republic of Islam. Trump's rhetoric with respect to Venezuela and Iran illustrate the manipulative use of words and the ignoring of fundamental historic facts in order to justify imperialist policies that seek to attain access over the natural resources of the world. But political discourse is not inherently so. Political discourse becomes distorting and manipulative when it is driven to defend particular interests. In the context of such an economic intention, it must distort and manipulate, without regard for truth or the well-being of humanity. The people must develop sufficient historical and political consciousness to recognize and ignore such manipulative rhetoric. Another political discourse is possible. Political discourse at its best is able to speak in defense of the common interest of humanity, which emerges in those political processes in which political power is in the hands of the delegates and deputies of the people. I have observed that such a discourse, emancipated from particular interests, is possible, because I hear it every day in socialist Cuba. This is Charles McKelvey, reflecting on the unfolding global popular socialist revolution forged by our peoples in defense of humanity.